Subcommittee will come to order. Before we begin our public hearings or resume them on the insanity bills, we have three bills on work session. I'd like first to take 2492, the identification process. Chair has had a meeting with staff and various interested parties to try to further refine the bill in the wake of certain objections or concerns that were expressed as to the version that came out of committee. We formally need to reconsider it, but we're going to need a fifth member. Representative Lombard should be here in a moment. In the meantime, let's go ahead with the review of the additional amendments. Linda.
Mr. Chair and committee members, you have before you a marked up version of the amendments to the amendments that are entitled Proposed Amendments to Amendments Adopted by Full Committee to House Bill 2492. And they begin on the second page to Section 3. And that is the section that provided that when a person's reported missing, then within 48 hours that a report would be entered into the state and federal records, and the police agency was to do two things. One, to provide the person that was making the report a certain form for gathering information that would be useful in identifying the missing person or human remains, and secondly, could request information from the dentist, denturist, physician, and so forth. The way that it's amended would provide that the police agency would ask the person reporting the missing person just to provide whatever information that individual had available to them about the person that would be useful to identify the person or human remains. And secondly, then it would put in the hands of the police agency the request to be made of dentists, physicians, and so forth. And it directs them to request it from the person and is permissive as far as they're requesting that information as in their judgment is necessary to continue the investigation of the missing person as far as trying to obtain that information from dentists, doctors, and so forth. The next change is in Section 4, and this is also related to the what information the dentist, doctor, or other practitioner could be required to give to whom. And the way that it was originally written would have allowed an individual, a parent or spouse, to go with this information form to obtain it from the doctor or a dentist. As it's amended here, it limits it to a written request. The dentist or doctor would respond to a written request just from the police agency. And the information in subsection 2 would specify that it's to be restricted to use for identification of missing persons or human remains and would not otherwise be available for public access. There's a new subsection in 3 that I believe, this hasn't been run through council, but I believe this would be the appropriate place to put it in. And basically what it does is assure that by a doctor, dentist, or whatever complying with the requirements to provide this information upon the written request of a police agency, that would not be a breach of confidentiality for them to turn over those reports as required. Also, final changes are on page 3, lines 18 and 20 and 21. Basically, those provide that if the information that was received had to do with a missing person who's later discovered to be living, that the agency would destroy the information that it received as to that person, and in the case where the person is no longer living, that the agency would seal that information, which would prevent information that might be useful in a further criminal investigation. Perhaps the agency would have obtained original records, and this would allow them to seal them and maintain them in case they would be needed later for a criminal prosecution.
I believe I can represent off of the meeting earlier that these amendments have resolved any remaining concerns. Well, I'm going to have to get the bill back before us. We'll wait till Representative Lombard arrives. He should be here momentarily. Are there any questions about the amendments? Representative Hill.
Excuse me. I went on page 3 where you inserted seal, keep confidential. What was the... I remember that came up. What was the purpose of eliminating confidential?
The idea by saying that they shall seal the information, it is kept confidential, except that they could use it in criminal investigation.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further questions? Okay, we'll take the reconsideration motion and the adoption of the amendments when Representative Lombard arrives. Let's go to 2262, AG subpoena power. Now, in the wake of the last work session on this bill, various options dealing with control approaches to the issuance of the subpoena power were apparently considered by the Department of Justice, and I guess in consultation with the district attorneys. Mr. Gary has sent the committee, and I believe it's been made available generally, a recommended approach, which is reflected in the amendments that were attached to the letter just distributed. Linda?
Ms. Chair and committee members, this the letter describes the several options that had been suggested to the Attorney General subpoena power. At the last meeting, the Solicitor General has written that he's discussed it now at the Department of Justice, and the option that they have selected and is expressed in the amendment would allow the Attorney General to apply to a circuit judge for issuance of a subpoena, and that such subpoena would issue when it appears to the court that justice so requires. We also got a letter from Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association that had described, and the Oregon trial lawyers agreed, says we agree the following in order of preference on the issue of Attorney General subpoena power. First choice was maintaining the status quo. Second was authorizing the AG to use a county grand jury. Third was to insert prior judicial approval into the process for AG subpoena authority, which is what I believe is expressed in the Attorney General's proposed amendments. Fourth was AG to call state grand jury, and fifth was the 2262 unamended, and they stated that given the uncertain financial impact of alternatives 2 and 4 and the fact that the committee wishes to accommodate the Attorney General, they preferred alternative 3. I haven't heard a direct response from them to these particular amendments.
I have a question. I don't understand the letter. What is the third alternative? Is that Representative Hill's alternative? The guy, is it 2 grand jury investigations? Hill wants them to convene a grand jury in any county in the state. I don't know what the third, I know what Representative Lombard's suggestion was. I'm looking for the first paragraph. And then looking to going to the circuit court, right?
That's the third paragraph.
So they want the third, but it says the notion that the Attorney General should have statewide grand jury power is attractive in several respects. Now, am I taking this out of context? It would make the Attorney General's subpoena power coexistent with that of the jury. It would also. Now, what I'm saying is that doesn't track, Mr. Chair, with the third with the third alternative. That's why I'm confused.
Mr. Chair, that wasn't the... They sort of reviewed, if I understood your question correctly, they reviewed the different alternatives and selected the one that would provide for the Attorney General to move to court to obtain a subpoena. All right.
So they want to go to Circuit Court.
They go on, in regard to the statewide power of representing the court, they go on to say we do not oppose a grant,
right, so
statewide
okay.
grand jury power, but at this time, neither do we seek it.
Okay.
Are there any questions as to the proposed amendments? Is there a motion to adopt them?
So moved.
Discussion? Is there objection? Okay.
Over to the floor.
Representative Courtney moves House Bill 2262 as amended to be reported to the full committee. We do pass recommendation. Call the roll.
Mrs. Courtney?
Yes.
Hill?
Aye.
I'll take that.
Aye.
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye. Okay. We briefly reviewed the amendments 2422, which is the identification bill, in your absence. That bill was reported to the floor earlier, so I'm going to move that we reconsider the vote by which it was reported so that we can formally have the bill back before us for the adoption of the further amendments. Okay. Is there any objection to the reconsideration? Okay.
Yeah, they have further problems with everything.
Yeah, that was supposed to be concerned about in college.
Chair would move the adoption of the amendments to 2492 LC amendments as further hand engrossed and distributed to the subcommittee. Is there discussion?
No, Mr. Chair.
Is there objection? Objection? Okay, Chair would move House Bill 2492 as amended be reported to the full committee again with a due pass recommendation. For further discussion? Call the roll.
Courtney?
Yes.
Hill?
Aye.
Lombard?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye. 2369, when we left that bill at our last work session, we asked for information dealing with the ABA standards governing the court's ruling on a motion for severance for separate trials. And Linda, could you report to us on your research on that issue, please?
Mr. Chair, I need to report one other matter, and that is that 2262 tabled April 26th.
Okay. Shows that we, by rule.
Tabled by rule. Also, 2369 is tabled by rule.
Chair moves that House Bill 2262 and 2369 be taken from the table. Is there any objection? Okay. Chair again moves that 2262 as amended be reported to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any change on the roll call from the earlier vote? If not, we'll take that as the roll call. Okay. 2369.
Mr. Chair, since the last meeting, when the committee considered 2369, there was a request that we look at the ABA standards one more time before, consider those when we came back to the bill at this next meeting. They're set out in a different way, sort of, it's hard to piece some of the standards into what the existing structure of this provision is. If I understood correctly that the committee was interested in the standard that should be used in order to determine if the defendant should be tried separately or not in the amendments that the committee considered or adopted, it provides that the defendants that are jointly charged for the same crime or crimes will be tried jointly unless there's a finding court orders that they be tried separately pursuant to a finding of likelihood that substantial prejudice would result from a joint trial. The standard that's provided in the ABA standards is, I believe, a lesser standard from that. They basically consider that, the way they set it up, that severance is to be ordered where appropriate to promote a fair determination. And if the application is made during trial for severance, then it's to be ordered where necessary to achieve a fair determination. Which, there's provisions for severing if they were joined improperly or if the joint trial would adversely affect one or more defendants' right to a fair determination of guilt or innocence.
What was the first portion of that?
That has to do with whether they were joined improperly also. There are some different matters and broader considerations that go into the ABA standards when they relate in what circumstances and who may control whether they be joined or severed. They also provide specifically that the court's allowed to sever on its own motion or in its own judgment. There's also another standard that requires that upon disposition of any motion to join or to sever offenses of defendants, the court must make a record of the reasons for granting or denying the motion. Those are sort of peripherally related. They're related, but not to them.
Uneasy sense I'm getting right now is that the bill may be an incomplete statement of policy dealing with the whole mechanism of joint trials. I'm beginning to get that same feeling that we ultimately developed when we were dealing with the bill governing misdemeanors being treated as violations, that as you bear down on it more, there are new issues that arise that are not necessarily apparent on the surface of the bill. I think what might be advisable here would be to place the bill on our Friday work session as the first order of business and give staff and me the opportunity to see if we can develop specific amendments for consideration of the subcommittee. And also give me and perhaps there are others who have the same feeling, a chance to make sure that if we're going to move in this policy direction, we're addressing the full range of issues which it's appropriate to address statutorily. Representative Courtney?
I suppose the discretion in the court, and that may sound stupid to state, is just very unattractive because it raises too many issues, is that right?
Well, no, I was more saying I'm... Aside from the question of how you define the standard to control that discretion, there may be other issues that we need to resolve whether we include as a part of the total statutory statement of policy.
Well, in terms of the existing law, what you're telling me is that if you looked at the existing law as opposed to all the new stuff and simply said that when two or more defendants are jointly indicted for a felony, they may be tried separately or jointly in the discretion of the court, you're saying that's wholly unacceptable because there are no standards in the law to tell the judge when to go separate or when to go jointly if you've only had that language. Is that what you're telling me?
Well, I suppose that would be true, but that particular version, I don't know that we were particularly considering.
That's what I realized. What you were, the law now says separately. The new one would say jointly, and I was simply saying, you know, rather than create a Herculean situation here, you know, I guess the Metropolitan Defender and those who still come off the wall because they wanted it totally in the side of separate. But that aside, since the words you're giving me basically say the bill may be dead, and because of these problems that are cropping up, and if we just took a few words out of the existing statute, Mr. Chair, I indicated to you just a few moments ago, I just want to know, that's still troublesome, problematic in terms of these policy questions that keep popping up? Is that right or wrong?
What trouble me? I don't know.
Too much discretion. Not enough, absolutely enough. Either joint or separate, you can live with that, but you can't live with this middle thing.
Well, I don't know. It would seem to me it would be better policy to state what would be the normal situation from which the departure would require a decision by the court based on a certain defined standard controlling that decision.
Well, is that
the standard at best is going to be, statutorily, is going to be somewhat amorphous.
Right.
And it's going to be refined, I would assume, well, depending on how far the subcommittee wants to go in pinning it down, it's going to be refined through actual application, I assume, and judicial review.
Is it now defined in statute, the last words on 6 and 7, in the discretion of the court, existing law, is that defined now statutorily? Because is that already in law somewhere? I don't mean case law, I mean statutory law.
I'm not sure. Martin, you don't mean...
The record, Mr. Chairman, Robert Parton, Assistant Attorney General, Department of Justice. To answer Representative Courtney's question, I'm not aware that there's any statutory refinement of discretion, any other than case law department.
All right. Then maybe what we should do is that what you're asking? Just take those words and define them a bit and be done with it, as opposed to what they try to do in 1 and 2 in the new law.
No, what I was saying was I was assuming off of the earlier discussion of the subcommittee that the subcommittee favored going in the direction of making joint trials the norm and then providing for severance by the court. Where we had left the issue before was what standard is to be applied by the judge in deciding a motion for separate trial. The substantial prejudice standard, I don't think was rejected by the subcommittee, but maybe there were others, suggested that since the ABA standards had addressed this question, we might want to look at those and see how that particular consideration of this issue had resolved that question.
Chairman, may I hopefully help the committee in somewhat in analyzing this? I've been in contact with Ms. Zuckerman several times this week, and we've discussed the ABA standards in relation to this bill. And she's correct in her analysis of the discretionary text there, at least in that context of severance. But the problem with the ABA standards is they're going in a different direction. The ABA standards are kind of a permissive standard. They allow for joinder either way. In other words, the court may join defendants who are charged with the same offense. There's no constitutional impediment to the proposal that's before this committee now, that is mandating that jointly tried defendants or jointly charged defendants who are charged with the same offense be tried together. But once you go over into that kind of mandatory or at least presumption that they shall be tried together. I think the discretionary test has to kind of follow along behind it, and you can't have a loose or kind of ephemeral test like Mr. Henning's proposal was, that a defendant could be prejudiced. If you have that type of test, then you don't have the presumption of joint trials. If a court has to consider possible or potential prejudice, no matter how inconceivable or far-fetched, the court's going to take the careful approach and allow for separate trials. If, as the bill proposes, we're going to presume that defendants jointly charged with the same offense should be tried for those offenses together, then I think correspondingly the discretion of the court should allow that the defendant has to make a greater showing than just mere possibility. And that's why that showing of substantial prejudice or likelihood of substantial prejudice language is in there. In other words, the two kind of go hand in hand. If you're going to have a presumption that you're going to have joint trials, then conversely, the defendant, in order to unravel that presumption, has to make a greater showing than just potential or possible prejudice. I'm not aware of any constitutional impediment to that kind of a standard, and I don't think there is one. It's really a policy decision upon this committee, and I think if you're looking to have joint trials in hopes of decreasing the costs and the repetition of multiple cases, then you have to have some kind of strong mandate in there, both in terms of saying there shall be and also in terms of when the court's confronted with a motion by the defense, that the defense has to be the ones to make a substantial showing of prejudice. Otherwise, it won't bring about the effect that's desired, that is joint trials. I discussed with Ms. Zuckerman also the concept of greater explanations in the statute, you know, going out in certain contexts, if we have confessions, what the standards would be, and I think those might be counterproductive. The standard of discretion, while it's vague in a statute, is open to interpretation by the courts of appeals, and they will find abuse of discretion. They look at the total context of the case, and you can have a variety of circumstances that would differ in every single situation, and I think to try to legislate those circumstances would be counterproductive. It might tend to overemphasize others and underemphasize others. I've also included and given copies of the California statute to Ms. Zuckerman, because I think we mentioned this a couple of months ago in my prior testimony of the bill, that California has a mandate for all trials, whether it be misdemeanors or felonies, and doesn't set forth any standards, but case law has evolved the idea that it's within the court's discretion. They also have a presumption in favor of joint trials, whether they be in misdemeanor or felony cases, if there are defendants who are jointly charged. So I think it really comes down to a policy consideration for this committee. I don't see a legal impediment to that substantial likelihood showing.
Mr. Chairman.
So if we just say that they can be tried separately or jointly in the discretion of the court, and then put down some standards of discretion, you don't support that approach. It's a middle ground approach to attempt to try it. You don't support it. Do you support it? Or could you live with it?
I don't know that it would really end up being a middle ground approach.
Whatever.
No, I don't support it.
All right, that's that. Forget it. It's not going to work.
Well, the California statute, as you know, simply says when two or more defendants are jointly charged with any public offense, whether felony or misdemeanor, they must be tried jointly unless the court orders separate trials. If there's no objection, and I hate to keep dragging people back over on this, I'd like to set it for our work session on Friday with the intention we will definitely act at that time. I'd like a chance to go through the ABA materials myself. Those are available to the subcommittee members if you'd like them also in the office. And we'll take action on Friday.
May I just make a suggestion,
yeah.
Mr. Chairman? I don't know if we didn't approach this. Ms. Zuckerman and I discussed the possibility of looking at federal statute. The federal statute also presumes joint trials, and it might be that in the commentary, if there is any, or legislative commentary, or at least in the statutes themselves, there might be some help to the subcommittee on that. And I should clarify, in response to Representative Courtney's question, I don't know that you have to have that substantial likelihood language in here. I'm just indicating that it parallels the idea that you're trying to presume the joint trials. You could just leave it up to the discretion of the court and leave it in that language. In other words, shall be tried jointly unless in the court's discretion it finds there be prejudice to the defendant. I think by doing that, you're watering it down to the point where the courts may bend over backwards. In essence, you'll be back to a return to the status quo, because right now the presumption is in favor of separate trials. But there's no legal impediment to doing that if that would be more acceptable to the committee, rather than have that substantial likelihood of prejudice language.
Well, Mr. Martin, could you assist our staff? Could your office send over the federal statute? That would be some assistance. We don't have the U.S. Code in our library here. If you could send it over by tomorrow, I'd certainly appreciate it.
We'll do so, Mr. Chairman.
We'll circulate that also to the subcommittee. And I'd like to invite the subcommittee to review the California approach also.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
May parallel federal, I don't know, I can't. Thank you.
Thank you.
This time we'll resume our public hearings of the three-bill group dealing with the insanity defense. So,